Football Weekly.
Last show before Christmas, and it's a festive Football Weekly today with more jingle than a handshake with Ron Atkinson. On today's agenda, Aston Villa. Well, why can't they win the Premier League? While Liverpool get caught up in a top v bottom clash with their own outfit, the villains are now just 5 points from top spot. Also today, after the citizens crumble at West Brom, we ask, is City just rhyming slang for Mark Hughes' job prospects? Elsewhere, Man United triumph in World Clubs Cup. Well, they do say a kitto never wins. Sid Lowe's in Spain. And in Italy, Milan overwhelm Udinese and Beckham underwhelms the San Siro. There's all that, plus a look forward to Friday's Boxing Day action in what, as I mentioned, is a special festive Football Weekly. Good, welcome on board, everybody. Producer Pete is in charge of the special Christmas sound effects. You'll hear, speaking of sound effects, that our sound has been quite literally affected by our move into Pod Mark 3. Pod Mark 4 is still in construction, but today, anyway, joining me here, Kevin McCarra.
And we've got a view from the window. It's incredible.
We have, actually. Yes. Describe it. Paint a picture.
There's an apartment block and some hoarding regarding an unbuilt.
Thank goodness for that tea, eh? Yeah. I was really worried. Around the back of King's Cross, you don't know, do you?
It's quite glamorous, isn't it?
Yeah. Barney Roney.
Hello, James.
Hi, Barney. Do you want to add any visual details to that?
Well, I'm just enjoying the sight of a major transport infrastructure project in full swing.
Right, okay. And I'm enjoying the sight of your magenta knitwear, Raphael Honigstein.
I'm trying to blend in with the new furniture here, which is all in magenta and yellow.
What you need is a big number across you and the word hub across your forehead.
Media hub.
Media hub, comfort hub. Anyway, now, listeners, you've been patient long enough. I say let's move on to, well, first off, who saw the World Club Cup final?
I did.
Did you? Yeah. It was you.
True fan.
Right.
I just thought the world was such an unsatisfactory place. That's the best South America I have to offer. It was a really depressing final. Even when Manchester United went down to 10 men, they were still the better team, and I still expect them to win, as indeed they did. Hmm. I think this is kind of... FIFA would love to have their own glamorous world club championship, but this isn't it. I think, you know, if you really wanted the best teams, you'd have at least maybe eight teams, maybe three from Europe and so on. But as it is, it's a complete mismatch. And I'm sure Vidic being sent off and being suspended for the Inter game is more of a... will stay in Alex Ferguson's mind more than the fact that they won the trophy.
Right, well, as you say, the bad news is, apart from the long journey and the fact that they returned a bit jet-lagged and that, is the fact that they've lost Nemanja Vidic for, some people are suggesting, up to three games, he'll go.
Yeah.
But he will therefore be out of the two games against Inter in the Champions League, the draw for which was last Friday. But the good news, though, is the fact that Wayne Rooney, it's confirmed Wayne Rooney is in absolutely cracking form at the moment.
Yeah, because he should score more goals. I mean, we always look, he scored, but why doesn't he score, say, every second game? I mean, he's playing centrally, he's got skill, he's got a good shot. I think his scoring record has been one of the things that's let him down of late, and it's about time he came good.
Do you not get a sense that he was perhaps the only person in the world taking the World Club World Cup seriously? It was slightly embarrassing. I was thinking, he always seemed really pumped up and really genuinely... pleased. It was quite sweet.
That's one of the best things about him ever since he first emerged. He's obviously kind of fired up all the time. I know that he's crazy in training as well.
Isn't it odd that Vidic is suspended for the Champions League? I mean, it's odd full stop that you play in Japan in the World Cup and then you're suspended in the UEFA competition, but why don't they just ban him for the next three domestic games? Because when people get red cards in pre-season, they get banned for the Premier League. So
I can only assume that they were there as champions, as the holders of the Champions League, and therefore that, you're right though, it doesn't make an awful lot.
They have to be punished even harder.
I think it's a bit strange. Anyway, many people feel that Stoke will be tougher opponents for Man United when they do return to the Premier League with, like a happy child at Christmas, two games in hand this Friday. We'll be talking about Friday's games later on. But after the weekend, Villa are now moving up into third place. Obviously, Man United weren't playing in Chelsea yet to contest their weekend fixture. After their victory at West Ham, a slightly fortuitous victory at West Ham. But, you know, when the breaks go your way, they do say it's your year. How far can they go?
I would agree with Martin and Neil that they don't really have a squad to compare with the habitual. I mean, maybe above Arsenal quite possibly, but Chelsea, Liverpool, you think of Torres, you think of the players Chelsea have got, Manchester United's incredible squad. Villa, the main advantage they have is that Europe is less of a priority for them, of course, with just the UEFA Cup to concern themselves with. And
it's
maybe
a big advantage, no?
It may be, but I don't think it's quite enough. I think if Manchester United can come back and get back into a groove, their squad is superior to everyone else's.
Player for player, okay, Man United, but possibly Liverpool, though, it's not like their squad is that much better. Okay, well, Torres, yeah, but he's injured.
Yeah, but I would even say that Mascherano and Xabi Alonso are very, very potent players for them, too. And
so potent that that Rafa actually wanted Villa's midfield general.
Well, yes, I mean, maybe he, but like all managers now, they'd like to stock up in midfield. But I think Liverpool's midfield is very potent. It's perhaps not blindingly creative, but it's good at getting a grip of games. I think Aston Villa are some way behind that in general. You know, I think Martin probably at the moment misses a target man forward in John Carew, who is injury prone anyway. You see Carlos Cuellar playing right back, although he's really a centre half by nature. So I think there's little kind of imperfections here and there in the Villa squad that you don't see at Manchester United.
Bah humbug, okay.
You slightly worry how Villa would do if they did make it into the Champions League as well. I mean, they play, they know how they want to play, the width and a big man in the middle, and that does very well in the Premier League. But you wonder how they'd do if they did.
But they're playing very well without a big man in the middle at the moment as well, no?
Yeah, the last few games. But like Kevin says, I think they probably do miss him, the big man.
I mean, there's even like Bernd Lahore. I mean, he's kind of he plays by instinct. But at the weekend, it's a terrible bad touch at one point where he could have gone through and goal and just miscontrolled the ball. And I think there's a bit of slight rawness here and there in the team that I think Aston Villa are still a working project. And I'm sure that Martin Neil will be nagging Randy Lerner to buy players either in January or certainly the summer.
Yeah, I think this discussion about them winning the championship is a bit of a red herring. I think the real thing to be hopeful or optimistic about is the fact that they could actually very feasibly break into the top four, which would make a nice change. I mean, Barney said he's worried about their chance in Europe, but that's of course what happens in normal countries, that teams do get in. You're not always the same team 6 years running, and then it's quite interesting in the Champions League for that reason. So I'm
normal countries. What were you suggesting?
Yeah, but there's competition for Champions League spaces, and I think it'd be great. It'd be really good, and I think in a strange way, it would also be good for even for Arsenal if they were to lose out.
Because or Liverpool, if it was them.
It'd be a bit of pressure, and it would mix up a bit of things.
Yeah, and because Villa could easily win on Boxing Day, which would leave them 6 points clear of
Arsenal. That's a huge game.
Yeah.
Liverpool, meanwhile, paid a visit to Arsenal just yesterday, and although they're still top and they came away with a point, it's been regarded as 2 points lost, really, for Reds. They were a man up. More importantly, perhaps, the home side had Cesc Fabregas off and will be out for the next couple of months, apparently.
Yeah, and they never suggested they were going to win the game, Liverpool. There is that lack of firepower. Fans have been complaining about draws at home recently. Mm. You saw it again yesterday. Wonderful finish by Robbie Keane, but actually defending was...
Who is this Keane? When did they get hold of him?
What an inspired signing he has proved to be. Mm. But although watching it again on television, you think, what on earth is the Arsenal back four doing? A long ball straight through, bang, goal. You know, it's...
It wasn't the first one either.
No, it wasn't. And it seemed... I wasn't really conscious of it at the time, but you see this defence holding a high line, even though the midfield isn't pressing very hard and therefore people are just getting the ball through them.
Arsenal's defence a bit shaky, but lack of ambition from Liverpool, Raphael?
Well, it's the second time I saw them in the flesh, Liverpool, and I saw them at Stamford Bridge, and I saw them at the Emirates, and I was actually very impressed with them, certainly in the first half, because I thought this is a team who know what they can do, know what they can't do, and executed a game plan nearly to perfection. And it all fell apart when they had the ball and had the initiative and didn't know what to do with it at all. And that's exactly what's holding them back against the lesser sides at home, because they can't really create anything. They can only react. But who's to say in a league that nobody wants to win, the teams who's best at not winning games might not be champions?
Wow, that's interesting. That is interesting.
You can kind of feel Liverpool's chances of winning the league kind of disappearing very slowly over the last few games. Too many draws. You can always kind of see it sailing out of the... I mean, this is like Arsenal last year, isn't it? You can just sort of feel the momentum slowing down. And Man United are still kind of fiddling around, getting out of bed, wondering what they're going to have for breakfast this season. They haven't really started playing yet, have they?
Chelsea, where are they? Are they halfway down the stairs? Have they been to the bathroom?
They're wondering who this strange Brazilian man is they've woken up with, and they're still working out what, you know, what he wants from them.
But, he's got a nice moustache.
This only has.
Well, you Chelsea playing Everton later on today will go top if they win that game.
Yeah.
Although I heretically think Aston Villa will do okay tonight. Nobody else agrees with me because the home record's
Everton.
Very poor. Everton, yes, yeah, against Chelsea.
Okay. Yeah, I can see them playing it nice and tight.
Exactly.
Which
although,
Chelsea don't like.
Although they're at home, they won't feel under any burden at all to take the game to Chelsea.
All right, well, that's the game that's coming up on Monday evening. But what about Friday's clash between Villa and Arsenal? Because you've got Fabregas who's out. There's talk of possibly a couple of months out for him. Adebayor is going to be suspended following his red card, which we could go over again, but the guy got a red card, rightly or wrongly, and it's a bit pointless to go over whether the referee, he's out anyway, and Arsenal not in the best of shapes for that game.
No, it's just very briefly, the referee's correct. So it's a booking, he's been booked already, gets sent off. I think Arsenal overreaction showed you the fact that they've lost their composure at the club. And it's just not a very impressive squad at the moment. Who would intimidate you? You know, which forward are you scared of? You know, who's the dominant figure in defence? They're lacking all these characteristics that you expect of a team that aspires to win the Premier League or at least be near the top. I think the Aston Villa at the moment are a more unified team who've got things like Martin Larsson, for example, who absolutely dominates the defence in a sense that no one does for Arsenal.
I think it's an absolute brilliant occasion for them to really put their foot down and hold on to that fourth spot with a great win. And the way that Arsenal are going into this game, also a bit low on confidence, you feel. The wingers are not working at all for them. I mean, Nasri is sort of flitting in and out of the game on the right. Danielson is not a wide player at all. And you just think they're there for the taking. And I think just one final point, I think that's the slightly disappointing thing about Liverpool, that they obviously had the very same situation in the second half. Arsenal were there to be beaten, and where Hull and Villa and other teams went on to beat them, even at the Emirates, Liverpool either couldn't or wouldn't commit, and that's a bit disappointing.
I'm just looking at producer Pete and say, should we have a little bit of a music sting and then talk about Man City in the situation at the bottom?
Why not?
Well, we'll punctuate it thusly.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Now, that's better. What about Man City? If Villa are being talked of now, even in the most hypothetical of terms for the title, what about City and a visit to the Championship? There they are in the bottom three. Dare we believe?
The richest club in the world getting to the Championship.
Heads up against QPR.
Yeah.
I think it's not unfeasible that everything might fall apart further. It's a question mark of how much patience they're going to have for Hughes. Whoever's going to come in is going to have an even more difficult job. You know, the sort of genial uncle type figure of Ericsson, who kept everything rather smoothly running, even though without ultimately no real success at the end.
Yeah, remember the way it fell apart at the end for him, though?
Yeah, it fell apart, but from a very high level. I mean, they finished comfortably in mid-table after going for Europe for a while, and with Hughes just falling apart at the very bottom of the table. And you feel that there are conflicting views and philosophies. You know, he wants a certain type of player, a certain type of football that he's used to. The owners want something completely different. Half the team don't know whether they're coming and going. It's all got the whole bearings of a catastrophe in the making, and I think it could get worse still. So I think they're in a terrible situation.
I do like the idea of Sven as a nice, endearing uncle.
That's all he ever did.
Kind of uncle you don't sit too next to after a few drinks at Christmas.
No, but Mike Hughes, okay, they're fourth. They were fourth this time last year, Barney, as you were pointing out.
Yeah, what's he have to? He's making a compelling case to be sacked. What more can he do? He's done everything he can.
Lose against the worst team in the division.
It's where the basics have gone. Like Richard Dunn was a terrific figure for them last
Micah
season.
Richards too.
Now he's a liability. Micah Richards is, yet again, we see Fabio Capello being vindicated. Fabio's first decision was, I'm not having him in my team.
Right.
And you saw him yesterday. He's standing at 5 yards in front of Bednar. The ball goes over him, and funnily enough, Bednar, with one of the worst headers ever, puts the ball into the net. I never dreamed that Roman Bednar of Hearts would score a winner in the Premier League.
I thought it was Uwe Zeller-like.
Yeah. Kevin, what's happened to Micah Richards? I mean, he was the great redeeming feature of the Steve McLaren England era, wasn't he? Wasn't he going to Chelsea for $25 million?
He does have all these attributes in terms of strength and athleticism and so on, but he's got there without learning anything about the game. And if you play him at right back, maybe you can argue there's a bit less harm than playing right in the goal mouth. But also, I think Joe Hart's a relatively inexperienced goalkeeper, and I don't think there's anyone holding that defence together. You expect Dunn to do it, but Dunn's lost form to a drastic extent.
Mm. And the players do seem to be distracted, I think, by the kind of the underlying theme of what's going to happen in January. Does anyone know whether there's any truth about these rumours of a players' meeting where there was dissatisfaction aired with Hughes's methods, and even, I believe, Robinho and his role within the squad?
No. Yes, yeah.
It sounds eminently plausible, yeah, because the players always want to blame someone else. Right. There's always player unrest if they're losing. They love to blame the manager. But Mark Hughes, again, we talk about Richard Dunn. You can say the same thing about Mark Hughes. Here's a guy that's a really solid manager. He knows the basics. He's done really well at Blackburn, and he can't transfer it to Man City. It's a mystery, but it must be to do with the whole sense of we're supposed to become one of the world's greatest clubs. I think it's going to turn people's minds.
Job, isn't it? This is a ridiculous expectation. He's for some reason he has Robinho, Sean Wright Phillips, and Stephen Ireland all in the first 11 because he's got to play them because they're his best players.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robinho out this weekend,
yeah, but then he doesn't like Alana for some strange reason. Who was at least for the first half of the season, he was perhaps the best central midfielder in the Premiership, let alone City. It's very odd, and I think yesterday, as Kevin said, I only saw the highlights, but the way they defended, or didn't defend, to be more precise, with the sort of movement and the lack of sort of any real effort to get near to their man suggests to me that this is a team who, you know, was almost defeated before the first goal kickoff, and you get that sort of body language or that sort of attitude from players who don't believe that they've got a chance, and that's the worst thing that can happen. And I think for that reason alone, the owners, even if they were more normal, more patient owners, will be in a position where they have to make that move sooner rather than later, because if they go down, it's a nightmare.
It's quite interesting, though, isn't it, comparing Sheikh Mansour's approach to the Randy Lerner template, which seems to be the one that works for being a billionaire, sort of parachuted-in owner. I mean, you don't buy really expensive star players who unbalance your team. You get a really good manager and back him. You buy people like Steve Sidwell rather than Robinho and stay in the background.
Although Villa's players were very, very expensive. I think they spent something like £40 million in the summer.
They spent... I have the figures here. They spent £28 million in the summer on...
It's a stat off.
Curtis Davies, Steve Sidwell, Carlos Queller and Luke Young. That's like this year. Which is sort of, you know, that's a Robinho worth, isn't it?
Hmm. Well, it's a fair point. But there you go. Whoever's organising that vendetta against former Man United players is doing a brilliant job, though, because you've had Roy Keane, Ince is gone, and surely Hughes. Meanwhile, West Brom now just 4 points from safety, so well done for them. They had to win because everybody else, I think, didn't they? Sunderland won under Ricky Spraga. They've become a goal machine. Sunderland, am I pronouncing that right, Kevin?
Spraga, yes.
All right. And, of course, Big Sam had a big, big impact, and not just on the bench when he sat down, for Blackburn, with a victory at Hull. Well done to him. 3-0 for Rovers.
I think he had that sense of knowing it was totally unrepresentative of reality, didn't he? He wasn't taking it too seriously. There won't be many games where they score three goals in short order like that.
Well, plenty more to come on the Premier League and beyond, including right after this, the latest from Sid Lowe.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, joining us on the line from an airport runway with the propellers already turning, so this is going to be a brief chat, is Sid Lowe. Sid, where are you off to?
I'm on my way back to Madrid. I was in Villarreal last night to watch Barcelona's match.
Right, they came from behind, earned a 2-1 victory. They're now 10 points clear, yes, at the top?
Yep, that's right. Obviously, 12 over Real Madrid, looking very, very strong indeed. I think last night was the first really, really big test that Barcelona have had. I mean, obviously, that sounds stupid when they lost the first game against Numancia, but that game almost feels like a kind of a throwaway match now because it feels such a long way away. Even when they had the two draws against Racing and Getafe, they really, really dominated. Last night, for the first time in Villarreal, they had a team that went for them, that made them suffer, that created chances and that could have won it. And I was really, really impressed with Barcelona's reaction. And yet again, just Dani Alves was just out of this world.
Now, Real Madrid beat Valencia, Higuain scoring the goal. I thought he was out injured.
No, he's back. He's back from injury. He's only had a relatively minor injury compared to most of his teammates. Of course, Diarra's out for the whole season. Ruud van Nistelrooy's out for the whole season. But Higuain only had a fairly minor injury.
Right. The new Diarra, the one from Portsmouth, apparently that deal's now going through.
Yeah, that should happen today. In fact, he may even be presented this afternoon if everything happens in time. He's having his medical at the moment.
Right, okay. I hope I'm not making you miss the kind of demonstration with the exits.
It's all right. I'm standing on the runway watching about 15 air stewardesses getting on. This is presumably their flight home for Christmas.
Oh, how nice. How nice. Okay, sorry, I thought you were actually in the plane and you were taxiing for takeoff.
No, I'm standing on the runway next to the steps on the way up to the plane. It's one of these dinky little planes that sort of makes you feel ever so slightly important.
Right. Whatever it takes, Sid, whatever it takes. You mentioned Numancia there. They had an absolutely amazing game, did they not, this weekend?
Yeah. 3 goals in the last 6 minutes to win 4-3. And Numancia's games have been well worth watching this year. There's been loads and loads of goals. Numancia play in Sodia, which is by far and away the coldest place in Spain. The ground, I mean, apart from maybe Valladolid, which is also freezing cold, and half the pitch was frozen.
Where is it?
Half the pitch was fine. This is up in northern Spain, towards Pamplona, kind of northeastern Castile. And half of the pitch was frozen, as it always is, and people were kind of tiptoeing around. But, of course, they didn't know which studs to wear because the other half of the pitch was absolutely fine. So you had this sort of spectacle of players looking like Bambi on ice a lot of the time.
Excellent. So there they were. They were 3-0 down with 5 minutes to go, and they won 4-3.
No, they were 3-1 down with 5 minutes to go and 1-4-3.
Against Real Valladolid.
That's the one.
Excellent. See, what did you get as a present from Real Madrid this year?
A camera, which is far more useful than a fold-up bike.
They gave every journalist a camera?
Yep.
What kind of camera, Sid?
Well, like a little dinky kind of, digital thing.
It's digital?
It's digital, yes.
Wow. That's really impressive. And this is a club, because you do hear rumours about how the bubble's about to burst in the Liga and clubs like Real Madrid, and because of we were talking about this, the real estate crisis worldwide, it's really going to affect Spanish clubs in particular. But Real's still got money to throw away on stuff like this, yeah?
Well, yeah, not just on stuff like this, but on players that they don't need as well. I mean, I think before Real Madrid worry about how much they're spending on cameras for ungrateful so-and-sos like me, they need to worry about how much they're spending on players and on player commissions as well.
Right. Did you ever use the bicycle, Sid? Did you?
I don't think I'm going to answer that.
Right, okay. Listen, now, you're off...
That's a no, isn't it?
Sorry?
That's a no, isn't it?
It is a no. Listen, the Liga's now stopped for Christmas.
Yeah, which is obviously brilliant from the point of view of those people who have to work to cover it. I'm sure for the fans it's a little bit of a disappointment. But as we were talking about last week, there's the autonomous region national games. Although the Basque Country won't be playing because of an argument about what they're going to call them. Oh. Because for years they've been called Euskadi. They wanted to be called Euskal Herrera, which is a more kind of cultural concept which takes in the free French Basque provinces and also takes in Navarre, which are called...
What, like Bayonne, that kind of thing?
Yeah, which is part of the claims, if you like, of the...
It's a bit
the,
like the
Spanish
People's Front of Judea.
But it's called real problems.
So what happened? So they couldn't reach an agreement on that?
Well, basically, the players demanded this. The Federation said no, and the game's not going ahead.
Right. Rafa says that's ridiculous.
No, I didn't. Barney said
it. Wasn't me. No, it wasn't me. If anyone's listening, it wasn't me.
It is ridiculous.
But who would they have been playing anyway?
Iran. So there's a politically charged game, eh?
They were going to be playing Iran?
Yep.
Anything else we should know, Sid?
I think we should know that there are two exits over the wing. And there's also nowhere to put my bag, which is a bit of a nightmare.
Sid, magnificent stuff. Listen, have a super flight, and we're looking forward to welcoming you on board the pod next Monday. Hope you have a lovely Christmas in the meantime.
Yeah, great Christmas to all of you.
Oh, cheers.
Bye-bye.
Marvellous. Oh, Paolo Bandini's just joined us. Hi, Paolo.
Hello.
Now, before we get on to you and your Italian business, Let's just mention one or two other things. Johnny Legend, who was the person who was asking what Sid got as a present from Real Madrid this year, also wanted to get a bit of information on everything in Scotland. Kevin, you're Scottish, aren't you?
I believe so.
Floor Genius was also posting in saying there's so many things to talk about. The resurgent but very skint Hearts, who are about to have a season undermining January fire sale. The Old Firm Derby, which is coming up. And then, of course, that Aidan McGeady, Gordon Strachan ding-dong. Have they now kissed and made up?
Well, one paper said that McGeady had apologised last week, but Gordon Strachan wasn't saying anything much about it at the weekend. Aidan McGeady, for people arriving at the story late, was one of these kind of boy wonders. Everybody in Scotland knew about him, fantastic skill, etc. In my opinion, he hasn't achieved anything like as much as he should, and I think Strachan's improved him a lot. I think Strachan's on his case a great deal, perhaps because he feels they should be getting more out of him. And Aidan is a fairly self-confident, opinionated young man, and a dressing room meltdown occurred following that. But Strachan must have smiled at the weekend, though, because with McGeady suspended by the club for 2 weeks, he gave a first start to Koki Mizuno, a young Japanese player on the left, who played very well and scored in a 3-0 win at Falkirk. And that's a position where Aidan McGeady would normally play.
Interesting. Oh, well, there you go. And do you think he's likely to make his move in January or make a move in January?
I don't think so. I'm not sure that there's a bigger club that wants Aidan McGeady.
Do you not foresee an unsatisfactory 6 months at Aston Villa?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not entirely sure why Aston Villa would particularly want him. He's a talented player, but in my mind, an underachiever. And I suspect the best thing for him would be to knuckle down and try and improve his game at Celtic.
Excellent. How did the Derby de la Buckfast go? That's Hamilton against Motherwell, for those not in the know.
A big win for Hamilton.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So why is it called the Derby de la Buckfast?
Well, these are... Buckfast is the wine of choice for the less affluent.
All right, then. Excellent. Now, in France, we mentioned that incredible Numancia thing. It was a similar thing. The Girondins of Bordeaux went into second place in League One after coming back from 3 goals down at Monaco. They ended up winning 4-3. Lyon, though, got their first win in 5 matches to stay top. Paris Saint-Germain are fourth, interestingly enough. Now, we were going to mention Leeds firing Gary McAllister. Barney's nodding appreciatively.
Well, you could sort of see it coming, couldn't you? I mean, Leeds, a lot of tinkering with his team, problems with the defence.
Yeah.
Looks a bit gloomy on the touchline.
Yes.
They don't appear to be storming back.
Where are they,
the...
ninth or something?
Yeah.
They're way down.
Lurking down. It's a funny looking squad.
This is in
well.
League One.
Yes.
Yeah. Given that I once ghosted Gary's column, I'm bound to spring to his defence for the rest of my natural life, obviously. But
right. Ghosted his column where?
Sunday Times.
Right.
During the.
How was that very hard work?
He's a lovely person,
but
fairly careful in what he says. He doesn't lash out in terms of opinions. But to get back to Leeds, he got them as far as the playoffs when he came in last season, but has been unable to sustain it. But I think Leeds are really a name. I don't think the squad has any reason to believe it's going to sweep all before it.
They do have some odd looking players in there, and they'll be trying to hang on to Fabian Delph as well, who apparently Arsenal are chasing.
AD Boothroyd, the current hot favourite to take over there.
Apparently the fans are pleased about that. He's a get-your-promotion kind of man.
All right, nice one. Now, Paolo Bandini, you've been patient enough. Italy, their final weekend, of course, before the Christmas break. They're back on, what, January the 11th, is it?
That's right, yep.
Okay, and the big focus was Sunday night's extravaganza at the San Siro.
Well, it was a whole weekend extravaganza if you factor in the press conference on Saturday. But yes, David Beckham unveiled at Milan. I was going to say at last. It feels like it's been dragging on for some time already. It was a rather bizarre sort of spectacle they put on before the game. He sort of walked out wearing his you know, fancy Dolce & Gabbana suit to be greeted by a line on either side of him of kids, basically, sort of under 10s.
Why
all
does
wearing
this always happen
shirt
with David Beckham? Always children. This happened at the Olympic handover as well. Kids. Those Marks and Spencer's adverts where he's riding a BMX surrounded by children.
It's a bit like how Mariah Carey maybe demands like a rider of kittens, sort of David Beckham demands a rider of
10-year-old.
It's a kind of Walt Disney character, isn't it? You expect children to ride them.
Anyway, so he sort of high fives this row of children and walks out.
Quite low fives, I think.
From and gets his shirt and then waves to everyone. And it was
microphone didn't work.
No, and it was an odd reception. I mean, you know, it's been so built up that you sort of was expecting it to sort of be a huge event. And actually, while, you know, the press have been following him and Victoria everywhere they've gone over the last couple of days, to the point that it was reported in Gazetta this morning that Victoria decided to cancel her restaurant reservation so she wouldn't be hassled on Saturday, and yet they still found out that she had fish, vegetables and Sicilian wine for lunch at a private house. So God knows what they've been doing to keep tabs on these things. But yeah, so he actually, like, you know, the stadium wasn't full for the game against Udinese on Sunday night. And, you know, there was some jeering and a little bit of whistling. I mean, it was more, you know, for the most part, it was light applause, but it wasn't really more than that. And, you know, there was one banner hanging from, you know, from the home support saying, you know,
Milan from top of the world to top model. Poor Milan.
Exactly, yeah. That's it. So it was, yeah, it was a bit of a, I don't know, anti-climax is the right word, because it was still a reasonably big deal. But, you know, I think basically everyone in Milan, certainly all the fans, are smart enough to know that this isn't what their team needs. What their team needs is defenders, particularly central defenders, desperately. And if you are going to insert something into that midfield, what it needs to be is someone with some dynamism.
Because who's going to be there beyond March the 8th, when the gentleman's agreement is he's going to...
Yeah, they've sort of been talking about this over the last week. I mean, technically the loan does run until June, which I guess must be to do with the rules that you have to have for lengths of loan. But they have a gentleman's agreement that they're going to let him leave in March. There was all sort of kerfuffle as well, because basically Milan had sent him a contract in November, on November the 4th, I think it was, and they only heard back 24 hours before his press conference from Beckham's lawyers, and Beckham's lawyers sent them back a contract that was, you know, fundamentally different to the one that they'd send, and yet somehow they managed to get it signed. So
includes him getting 50% of all Beckham related revenue, including money from friendlies. Apparently they're playing against Rangers, aren't they? As you do in the middle of February.
It's interesting. I mean, Milan, the only Italian team to have got as far as the semis or beyond in the Champions League in the last five seasons.
Oh, here we go. But then
they don't qualify. So how does the rebuilding continue with Beckham as a cameo?
I think there have been positive things for Milan this season. I mean, Milan are going to get in the Champions League this year.
But are they going to get back to?
They're not going to be challenging for the title anytime soon.
No.
And you wonder how it's going to get better before it gets worse, because you know, you still look at our defence and think, you know, Maldini, I know he's retiring at the end of this season, but he is still playing.
And they just bought Thiago Silva. It's not like they're not. Finally gone out and bought a world class, or certainly a defender with a world class reputation, who's under 25.
No, but the problems are all the way through the team, which is the point I was about to make. I mean, you've got Christian Abbiati playing in goal, who is not up to the standard required at that level.
Right.
You've got a midfield which regularly at the moment includes Massimo Ambrosini, who isn't exactly getting any younger, which regularly includes, Gattuso is sort of the key linchpin, who now he's missing, is suddenly a massive fault. And he's not a young man anymore. I know Flamini's sort of been brought in and supposed to be coming on, but I actually think that even before he's been injured, they haven't been giving him as many opportunities as they should have been. And I just think that they're sort of, the planning seems very cack-handed. They're not doing anything they don't look like they're planning in an organised way for the future. Yes, they have gone out and bought Thiago Silva, and that is a good point. And I think that is the first sort of acknowledgement of that problem existing. But again, he can't play till next season. It sort of just feels like there's sort of everything's very piecemeal constantly.
Mm. Well, you're right. In the meantime, they had a big, big win Sunday night against Udinese, who are probably what's the opposite of a form team.
City.
Right. But they are they had one point in their last six matches, and in that one they'd been 3-0 up, and then let Lazio come back and draw 3-3, and they just collapsed against Milan.
Yeah, it's been absolutely stunning what's happened to Udinese. I mean, you know, they were top of the league a month and a half ago, and they've just completely fallen apart. And you know, Pasquale Marino as the manager, he's tried different things. Like against Lazio, he went to 3-4-3, and in the first half thought, oh, brilliant, this is working, which is what he did last season with 3-4-3. But then it's obviously entirely in their heads, because it's a confidence issue. As soon as things start going against them, they just completely fall apart. And yesterday, the only player who came out of it with any credit for them was Antonio Di Natale, who scored. But other than that, they were just awful.
Paolo, obviously Capello famously, or even very outspoken, said that it was a diabolical draw for the English side coming up against three Italian teams. What's the view in Italy? Is there a sense now that sort of the pendulum of powers shifting back. He did mean for the English side.
Did he?
Yes.
I think
that was my understanding of
it. I think the understanding that the Italian press took from it was different to what the English press took from it. I think the understanding in Italy was it's a diabolical draw. And I think actually he sort of hedged it in a way that was more like it's a diabolical draw because it means we're going to be losing some of the tournament's biggest teams early in the tournament.
Right.
Rather than specifically it's a diabolical draw for England or for Italy. It's just we are going to lose some of the big teams and it's going to take away some of the glamour at an early round. In terms of the pendulum swinging, I don't think anyone in Italy is really getting ahead of themselves. I think everyone is going to be very, you know, excited when these games come around. I think it's an exciting draw. I think everyone could see that, but I think, you know, Inter, no one particularly has confidence that they've come on yet. Under Mourinho, of course, you know, he continues to sort of sit pretty in the league, but they're a point, you know, they're actually a point worse off than they were last year. I don't think that's neither here nor there, but the point is they're not.
But in the Champions League, they've lost at home to Panathinaikos, drew at home, and only just with the Cypriots.
Eight points. I mean, you know, it's a very poor return than six Champions League games.
But I think it's been said in the pub before, which is that in the Champions League, it's all about hitting your form at the right moment. And
Inter never do.
But I do think what's interesting is, which, and again, I think I've made this point before, but that Mourinho has said, I'm playing 4-4-2 at the moment because that's what I need to do to win games in the league because my 4-3-3 isn't working. But he has never given up on this point that he needs to get them playing 4-3-3 before they're going to start winning in Europe. So the question is, after the winter break, is he going to start bringing Quaresma and Mancini back in and trying to make that work? And that's what we're going to have to wait and see.
It'll be quite some coup if they do anything against Manchester United, though. I mean, the respective squads are...
Kevin,
this is interesting. We were talking about this on the way in. Yeah. And far be it for us to take our usual positions on this side of the line, but you're saying that Manchester United have got a much, much, much better squad than Inter.
Yes, I don't know if I agree with that. To compare with Wayne Rooney or Ronaldo in the do you think Zlatan is really all that a big game player?
He's been playing exceptionally.
Any big games?
Well, hang on, is Ronaldo a big game player now?
Well, I think he's.
Well, he wasn't the top scorer in the Champions League last year.
Yeah, he scored in the final.
Bad, yeah, but that's thanks to the Cruyff stage. He's scoring in the final. You get.
You can't say that about Zlatan.
Zlatan hasn't played. He did some years ago, and he hasn't since.
He's pretty good on YouTube, Zlatan.
It is his big issue. It is. I'm not denying that.
It's quite a big issue, though, isn't it?
It is a very big issue. Having said that, he's been absolutely outstanding for Inter. An Inter team that has not been performing well has been rescued by him and the linesman.
Aren't you the cause of the problem here? Because you...
me?
Yes. not in that sense, but people like me became obsessed with Italian football watching you presenting Gazzetta d'Italia when Milan had the great Dutch players and so on, and we all have that in our heads.
Yes,
and things do change, and one day, of course, Italian football will be a top and English football will be hopeless, but at the moment
we're not watching.
There's a reason why the TV rights are not as attractive because Italian
You're blaming James for that.
I'm blaming the fact that you put into our minds this idea of Italian football as the absolute zenith of football.
No, I don't agree. I think the Premier League is stronger right now than City, and the facts demonstrate that when English clubs play Italian clubs, they generally beat them. Mm. I think that this February is going to be extremely interesting. I think that Inter are shaky as hell in Europe, but I think that Juve have a very good chance of putting Chelsea out. And I think Roma could spring one or two surprises.
Well, Arsenal have problems anyway.
Well, I think Roma are a very good side.
I think the point you just made about Juventus is absolutely spot on. I think a lot of people in Italy would be looking at Juventus right now as the team with the best shot of doing something. I mean, partly because Chelsea went to Roma and were so poor. But also because Juventus, aside from losing to Inter, are on an unbelievable run of form at the moment. I mean, they are, you know, playing very, very well. They had a really good 3-1 win away to Atlanta this weekend. You know, Atlanta who'd only dropped one game at home all season. Yeah, again, there are some areas of the team which you look at and you think, how long will Del Piero keep doing it? But for this season, certainly, I think Juventus are probably the most dangerous of the Italian sides, unless Inter somehow get their act together.
Catania, Roma, meanwhile, just one quick mention for that because they had a nice punch up, and Mek says, and who else was involved with Morimoto, the Japanese? Anyway, Catania beat Roma 3-2.
Jeremy Menez kicked him in the face.
That's it. And then apparently all went off in the tunnel.
But no, there was a quote from Perotta, which I had. Once I tried to get my son on the pitch at the Olimpico, and Roma had to ask for 1,000 authorizations Today there were 500. This is Simone Perrotta, right midfielder. Today there were 500 people on the pitch, and I think it's not right. So I think they were all a bit cheesed off generally with everything down there in Catania. But there's over the last couple of seasons that has sort of been developing into a bit of a bad tempered game.
And well, Roma beat them 7-1, was it?
7-0, I think. 7-0. I can't remember. I think it was 7-0. Yeah. And then Catania drew with them 1-1 in the season. And even though actually Inter had won the league anyway, because Inter won, Catania sort of went around going, "Ah, we stopped you winning the title."
Right.
So,
you know what? I've just realised that we're pretty much at the end of today's, but we haven't even mentioned, apart from Aston Villa Arsenal, the rest of the Boxing Day fixtures. So should we just quickly whiz through those? Chelsea are taking on West Brom.
Yeah.
Raphael, you're going to be there.
Yes.
Thanks to the standard of the Stamford Bridge Catering.
That's the reason. I think it'd be an interesting game.
Yeah.
You know, I think last year, Boxing Day, Chelsea were Aston Villa 4-4, if I'm not too mistaken. So it was certainly round about Christmas time. So, yeah, it could be good.
Right, what do you think about Liverpool and Bolton? Another home draw there against Manager of the Month, Gary Megson's Bolton side.
It does have an air about it. Attritional football from both teams.
Interesting. Man City are taking on Hull. Barney, you're picking out that hot potato.
Well, it's a big game for Mark Hughes, isn't it? And you'd think if he loses that one, he'll be pushed even further towards his inevitable doom.
If indeed he's still on the bench come Boxing Day.
Oh, I think he'll still be there.
Yeah?
I mean, they're going to give him January a
splurge.
On
Do they?
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying, unless they're lying.
It will be a little. I mean, we really are now at the point where it'd be quite mean to sack someone before Christmas.
I thought it was a traditional time to do it. Isn't it?
Time off for the families?
Yeah, home for Christmas. Borough taking on Everton. Portsmouth are at home to West Ham, which should be an interesting game.
Relegation six-pointer.
Well, indeed. Stoke host Man United. United back from their Far Eastern adventure, so that'll be a very interesting game. Stoke have one of the best... Do they not have the or one of the... No, Fulham have the best home record in the Premier League. Stoke have a decent home record.
No, well, they've won 5 of their 9 games at home. That's pretty decent.
Yeah, okay. They're hosting Man United then. Man United trying to claw their way back into the title picture. Sunderland are at home to Blackburn. And Joe Kinnear, rubbishing reports that he'd instructed somebody to speak to Sunderland on his behalf. And nobody believes that happened at all, I'm sure. Spurs host Fulham. Now, that's an interesting game, isn't it? For Spurs. No, it's not. Okay. But no, and then Wigan Newcastle. You know what? Enjoy your Christmas, everybody. And what will be on Boxing Day. And the game of the day is, of course, that Aston Villa-Arsenal match. And we'll be back on Monday the 29th to have a look at that. It's going to be our last pod of the year. So if you want to post in any of your best ofs, I know producer Pete will be delighted to spend hours trawling through the archives for them. Anyway, best of pod from the year, the usual address, guardian.co.uk, and then follow the links to our little page. We've got some video stuff up. Actually, I think the first of 4 little video bits should be viewable from today, so you might like to view that while you're over there. But in the meantime, anyway, many, many thanks for listening in today. And for joining us, Kevin McCarra, Barney Roney, Raphael Honigstein, and Paolo Bandini, producer Pete. And happy Christmas to you all. Do you want to say happy Christmas to you?
Happy Christmas,
happy
James.
Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas.
Happy New Year.
You know what to say in German, Raphael?
Frohe Weihnachten.
Buon Natale.
Hey, there you go. Have a lovely one, Podsters, and we'll speak to you soon.